Welcome everyone. We're about to begin Be'ezras Hashem, Shalom Bayis Shir number 425. So we talked last time about arguing and about how winning is losing, and the key is to see each other's perspective and view each other as one. Now, we know that we all have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara, and the Yetzer Tov is part of us that connects to our rational thinking process in a healthy way. It's called Seichel HaYosher also. And that allows us to change our natures. It allows us to do things differently. By listening to our rational side, we become better human beings. Again, we're not talking about we're talking about Seichel HaYosher, like Avraham Avinu had, that we could develop a healthy way of thinking. And when we are a young person, until Bar Bat Mitzvah in general, we're functioning with instincts more. And as we learn, we use our intelligence, which is the Seichel Hashem put in there, called the Seichel HaYosher, that we need to acquire that ability in order to overcome some of our inner negative natures. Rabbi Lane says an interesting story. At 10 o'clock at night, one of his friends called him. "I must speak to you. Come over." He arrived, and he was very, very angry. He had a blow-up with his wife, and it created a tremendous argument, and there was a big fight, him and her, and he said, "I wanted a divorce," and he calmed him down, and he said again, "I want to get divorced," whatever it is, very angry. But he was a firm person, so Rabbi Arlene asked him. He was a very good friend, so he could talk to him this way. He says, "Is your decision to divorce your wife coming from the Yetzer Tov or the Yetzer Hara? Are you thinking rationally, or are you letting your emotions take over you?" And his friend admitted, "It's probably coming from the Yetzer Hara." So Rabbi Arlene said, "Okay, so what do you think about that?" So he answered, I agree with my Yetzer Hara." And he realized the humor of that. Rabbi Arlene says ultimately the crisis passed and he was calmer, went back to his wife, worked things out. So Hashem wants us to have shalom. That's the first thing we need to know. Even if there are nisyonos and tests and we all have them, He wants our marriages to succeed. And when we have conflicts and troubles that cause our marriage to deteriorate, it's forces of destruction, the Yetzer Hara, that wants us to live in chaos. The Yetzer Tov, our rational, our soul, or our rational thoughts in a healthy way, is the part of us we need to activate when we are in a marriage. It's our nature to run after our own needs, but we need to use our thinking and our healthy neshama view to consider the other person's need. So this is very, very important. There's an interesting story. It's brought down. I love this story. Rabbi Lane brings it down. I remember it said many times in many ways, but he had a young, frum person. He got married a week before Pesach. And that year, they spent the Yontif with his wife's family. And it was going well, and it was enjoyable, and it was besimcha, and it was powerful. But then what happened? The mother-in-law served soup. As the chassan was eating the soup, he saw something float on the top of the soup. He bent and saw it was a grain of wheat. And it passed, of course, the soup, and the chassan blew up. How could his in-laws be so careless? And he ran out of the room. The family was all distraught. How could this happen? They know they cleaned up as best as they could, and meticulously, what happened here? And They were sad because they violated the Bal Yira, Bal Yamotze, and so on, and how would it affect the new couple's relationship. So the next day, the chassan and the father of the kala went to the shul, and the rav immediately saw something was not right, and he asked the father of the kala what's going on, and the father of the kala told the rebbe what happened. When davening was over, the rav invited the chassan into his office, and the chassan agreed. He was ready to divorce. After going over the details, the rebbe says, "Could I have your shtreimel?" He asked the chassan. And the Chassan took the Shtreimel and gave it to the Rav, the Rebbe. And the Rebbe knocked the Shtreimel against the table several times and then lifted the Shtreimel, and there were wheat grains all over the rabbi's desk. What happened in those days, as a chassan, they used to throw grains of wheat at the chassan before the wedding as a bracha, that they should have a tremendous mishpacha, just like the grains grow into wheat and so on and so forth. And it seems that some of those grains got stuck to his shtreimel or whatever it is, and when he was leaning over his soup, that grain fell out. This is brought down in one of Rav Pesach Krohn's books as well. But anyway, that's the idea of what we need to understand in marriage. We blame the other person for our mistakes, but it really comes from us. And it takes a certain humility to recognize that, and to recognize that our spouse, our husband and wife, is our helpmate to perfect ourselves. We don't have to feel attacked when criticizing, and we will listen with an open mind and take their opinion seriously. And then there's another step to it. He has a chapter that's entitled, "It's Not What You Say, But How You Say It." When we read through the John Gottman books, he brought it out a lot also. He surveyed couples for over 40 years. And he realized that it's not that good marriages, couples in good marriages, not that they don't fight. Often they fight often. The word fight may be strong. You call it disagree, quarrel, whatever you want to call it. But good marriages have a lot of that too. What's the difference? The difference is that they know how to disagree with each other with a certain respect and understanding. Everyone's spouse once feels is the aggressor, right? It would make sense to say that it's a 50-50. Sometimes 50% I'm at fault, 50% you're at fault. Or 70-30. But it never happens that way. Each one, husband and wife, most of the time, 98% of the time, they say they're 85% right. They're 95% right. Always that spouse is 95% right or something like that. And their spouse is only 5% right. Instead of really understanding that logically and statistically, it should be more like either 50-50, 60-40, 70-30, to have each spouse truly believe that they're 90%+ right shows that there's definitely a certain bias in their perception. When you have an argument, there's two sides to it always. There's the one who initiated the argument and the one who is reacting to the argument. So a husband or wife says something or did something, the other one reacted poorly. And then the first spouse responds in kind, then the other spouse answers back, and then they have a huge fight. Who started the fight? So you would say that the one who aggressively said the sharper thing right away. But yes, they did technically start the fight. But the one who could possibly still aggravate that and create a much larger factor in it becoming a big fight is the one who reacted. And that is the key. It's very important in your response. In your response in an argument, when you're being told something that could cause an argument, to know how to respond in a healthy way. That's why when you communicate, if one of them said something and that could be an argument, the spouse, the other one that's receiving this, if they're not in the best of moods or they're very upset, then it's not the time to speak much. It's time to calm down first. Because when you're upset, you will have trouble choosing the right words on how to respond. But that's the key. It's a skill that even if you're upset, You could train yourself to use the right words instead of letting your frustration out in that heat of the moment, which could cause a bigger argument. We said many times, I'm going to repeat it again because it's a very valuable concept. It's called the sandwich method, which means that you sandwich your request and criticism between two compliments. For example, it's nice that the dinner is always ready when I come home. Beautiful. That's the compliment. Then you add your request. I would appreciate if you could pick up the dry cleanings on Thursday so we don't need to rush on Friday afternoon. That's the request in the middle. And then you finish off with another compliment. I see you really try to please me, and I appreciate how you take care of things for me promptly. When you say a sincere compliment first, and then you have your request based on something you want a change, and then you afterwards say another compliment, that helps the situation. This is not a fake tactic. You see, this is the problem people have. They say to themselves, well, I'm real. I'm upset, and I should just say to MS and point out that I'm not happy with this. I need this to change. And the two compliments I'm giving is, I'm only giving them for that purpose, so it's not real, it's not genuine. This is just a tactic, a sort of external shtick in order to not get into a big fight. The answer is, though, it is not a shtick. It is not a fake. It is not a shtick, because when you're giving those two compliments, you are sincere about them. You mean that 100%. And that is what it is. The first compliment, I appreciate this, the how you prepare things for me and take care of me, is genuine. The last compliment of I appreciate how much you take care of me and so on and so forth is genuine. Both compliments are genuine. And it's just that when you put that on both sides, one at the beginning, one at the end, and in the middle is that constructive correction, then it's healthy. And that idea also is not just what you say, but the tone of voice in which you said it, the body language of how you said it, the sentence structure, all of these things. For example, think of these words, he says. I would appreciate it if you would pick up your socks. Okay, so those words actually are quite respectful. I would appreciate, please, if you could pick up your own socks. But when you say it with an angry tone or threatening body language, even if you're saying the words are innocent, but that will be viewed as an attack. The same words. If you say it softly, with a kindness, with a smile, I would appreciate if you would pick up your socks. It's non-confrontational, and it'll be macabre. You love me, and you just want me to pick up my own socks, which makes sense. But when you say it in an angry tone, with angry body language, then they shut down, because they consider it an attack. Then he gives some fantastic examples here. So, for example, if you said to your wife or to your husband, why did you park crookedly? Which is, you know, a reasonable issue. You know, if you always park like 3 inches off the curve and slanted, and why did you park crookedly? But instead of saying it in those words, you say, like, I prefer it if you park closer to the curb, because otherwise I'll be worried that the car will get scratched, you know, so if you could please just, you know, adjust a little bit. Or, why are you so late? So instead of saying, why are you so late, let's say the husband comes in always late when the wife is preparing supper, instead the wife could say, I enjoy eating supper as a family, can you please try to be home on time? Or, why did you leave the lights on? And instead you say, can you please turn off the lights? Why did you leave the towel on the floor? Instead of that, you say, could you please pick up the towel from the floor? Why is the garbage still here? Instead, you say, I appreciate if you take out the garbage. Or, why are the kids failing in school? Instead of saying that, I think the kids could use some more help with their schoolwork. Could we discuss this? Can we talk about it? Can't you be more organized? Instead of saying, can't you be more organized, you explain in a calm, loving way. I feel frustrated when I can't find things. What can we do to get the house more organized? Is there anything I can help with? And so on. Can't you be more neat? You could say, I like it when you make an effort to be neat. Or can't you listen? You say instead, you know, I feel that you're not really listening to me, and I appreciate if we could talk about it, and I love you, and I just, and again with the sandwich thing also, that I love you, but I feel you're not listening to me. If you could please, let's talk about it. Or can't you stop nagging? You could say, you know, let's talk about this. I don't, I don't really like the way you're talking to me this way. I know what you want me to do, and I'll get to it as soon as I can. So that's not, you know, so all these sentences, the healthier ones that I just said, say the same message like the earlier one, but the reaction will be different. Why? Because in all of the first things we said, the unhealthy, it's you. It sounds like an attack. You park crooked. You were late. You left the lights on. You left the towel in on the floor. You didn't take out the garbage. You're the cause of not of the kids failing because you didn't do enough homework. You're not organized. You're not neat. You're not listening. You're not nag. You're nagging all the time. It's always you. In the second healthier, you're saying it in an I instead of a me. Right? Not can't you take out the garbage, but I'd appreciate it. I would appreciate it if you took it out. Instead of can't you listen, you say, I feel that you're not listening to me. So this is, and each one, I'm not going to go through every one, but that's the idea. The first way of talking, the you sounds like an attack. You are late. But this other one sounds like a request or a need. You know, I really need you to be on time because I want to sit together as a family, and it's really important. Or I have a need that needs to be fulfilled. That's not threatening. That's less threatening, certainly, and that helps in the communication. This seems to be the sheer basic things, but it's really profound. And when you practice it, it could really transform your marriages. Bracha and Hatzlacha.